Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and we're back for part two of the countdown of the interior defensive line in this year's NFL draft. Joining me for that again is Jake Vogel. Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. How about yourself?
Life is good. And Orioles are up 2-0 as of an hour ago, so we're happy about that. We just went through our review of what the Ravens' situation is, the possibility of a double dip at defensive line in this year's draft. They haven't yet committed any a contract or money or even a camp invite to Brent Urban as yet, but I would still expect he's on the Ravens' radar and probably someone who will come to camp with them, assuming they don't draft a couple of guys, or maybe even if they do. But we also acknowledge the fact that they're going to be moving on at some point. We also talked a little bit about the Travis Jones situation. Travis Jones is in the last year of his contract, and while the Ravens need a nose tackle for early downs right now, they may need a nose tackle to replace Travis Jones a year from now.
Yep. Yeah, completely agree with that.
And so, the Ravens, Travis Jones, in fact, is the Ravens' only interior defensive line draft pick of the last four seasons. So we're getting to the end of the COVID era here, and there are a lot more defensive linemen this draft. Very, very heavy, deep, deep, deep defensive line draft. There's, I looked at about 25 guys, and probably about, looks like 24 of them I'd be happy if they were Ravens. I've got one guy I don't want on the Ravens, but some of those are only UDFAs, so don't get me wrong, but right. Still, it's a very exciting group. So let's go over who we had at 10, 9, 8, 7 so far. So who was your number 10 guy was?
Let's see. My number 10 was Aeneas Peebles out of Virginia Tech.
Okay, good three-tech pass rusher. I like Jordan Phillips out of Maryland to come and fill at the nose. He has extraordinary stops to miss tackle ratio for his career. In fact, it's the best in the entire defensive line group. Your number 9 guy was?
Alfred Collins out of Texas.
Great choice. I had him at number 7. We both kind of liked him, and definitely a guy who could fill that nose tackle role right away. He's an enormous man. Mm-hmm. I had Vernon Broughton, his line mate from Texas, as the next guy on the list. He's much more of a three-tech pass rusher and a guy who, if the two guys were on the board, there's no doubt in my mind, I'm taking Collins over Broughton at that spot. And we'll move to your number 8 guy.
My number 8 was Tyleek Williams from Ohio State.
Loved him. Had him all the way up at number 4. Barrel, who runs through people, and incredible half-man leverage he can put in particular on an opposing offensive lineman. So a great stunt under guy. I like TJ Sanders as my number 8 guy. Another guy who's really more of a pass rusher than anything else. I think he could fit for the Ravens as early as the end of round 2. But the problem is I think other people will want him more. He three-tick pass rusher is kind of a hot commodity in the NFL, and there aren't enough really to go around. It's almost like quarterbacks in a way that there aren't quite enough. So I think the Ravens, because they have Matt Ibike, are probably less likely to post the draft capital necessary to get a Sanders. Number 7 for you was?
Number seven for me was TJ Sanders. Yep.
Okay. Number seven for me was Collins. So ready to start off with the top six. Who's your number six guy?
My number six is a little bit of an older prospect, Darius Alexander out of Toledo. You know, I'll get into his measurements first. It's something I haven't done for a number of these players. His RAS was really good, 9.16. That's relative athletic score. He's practically 6'4". I think he was 6'3" and 7/8". So you put cleats on, he's over 6'4". 305 pounds. He had 28 bench reps, 34-inch arms or close to that, and 10-inch hands or very close to that. I thought he was a strong player. The level of competition is always going to come into things in general when you're evaluating these players, but especially when you're talking about players that aren't at the Power Five mm-hmm. conferences. He played at Toledo. His best game was definitely not against Illinois. I thought he was solid, but you could see him kind of break out more against those lower level competitions, like against Miami of Ohio in 2024 or against Western Kentucky. He gets double teamed a lot when he's playing these teams that, you know, have watched him on tape and realized what kind of player he is. That's a good thing though. It draws attention. He's a really good 1v1 player. But he can struggle a little bit against double teams. I think he developed a good bit from 2023 to 2024 with his hand swipes, gap jumping. I mean, he's like I mentioned with his RAS, he is extremely athletic. I think his explosive numbers are really strong, and you can see that just with his lateral agility and movements. Yeah, he's going to be more of a three-tech pass rusher, sacking players, sacking the quarterback against Miami of Ohio, multiple sacks in that game, and some TFLs and pressures against Western Kentucky. But, yeah, I think he's a good penetrating player with a really solid repertoire of moves. And so, still some potential to grow because he was at that, smaller school. He's an older player, but athleticism should hopefully trump a little bit of that age.
Did you happen to have his age? I know he spent 5 years at Toledo, but I didn't have an age.
I don't think it was on that page, but I know that he is like probably 24.
Right. That makes sense. And again, part of the post-COVID group that's just making it out a little bit late on the defensive line. I liked him also. I had him at number five overall. Five for Darius Alexander. A lot to like here. So his stops to missed tackle ratio is just average, 4.5 last year, 4.6 career, 13.5% missed tackle rate. It's a little bit high, but if you have a pretty good stops to missed tackle ratio, and this is, you know, right in the, it's probably above average for college in total, then that 13.5, an extra missed tackle or two, you don't mind because you're getting more stops for it. He played 51% pass rush snaps for his career. So even though he's a big three tech who lives on length and a first step, and I think at the NFL level, he's going to be much more of a pass rush threat. He's a guy who at Toledo was playing as much as they could get him on the field because he's by far their best player. One of the best run defenders in the class. He's provided some pass rush juice the last two seasons with 7.5 sacks during that time. Knocked down 11 passes at the line of scrimmage in the last four seasons. So definitely a talent there. You mentioned that the context issues from the MAC, so I'm not going to go into that. Had a really cool highlight. So the final game he played was the Game Above Sports Bowl, and Toledo won that game 48-46 over Pittsburgh in six overtimes. And he had a Michael Pierce-esque interception in his final college game where he dropped short middle. He not only did he make a play on a ball, which is like it was thrown right to him, pretty much, but he avoided tackles on the way back and took it 58 yards to the house as part of that win. And it's a huge win for the Toledo program to win 48-46 in a bowl game against a team like Pitt, who's a Power Five team. That was the only time he was targeted in 18 career coverage snaps. So he made one out of one of his career targets were intercepted. That's pretty cool. Okay, now a few observations back to his defensive line play. I thought he denies space exceptionally well versus the run. That's very apparent, whatever you're watching. Good bull then shed reps. And I talked about that a little bit with one of the players earlier, but he definitely tries to have a plan to push and release a player as opposed to just pushing him directly back into the cone. Or the walk back reps, you know, in his game were a big part of what he did. At his best, I'd say he uses his length and first steps to put the opposing interior offensive lineman at a big disadvantage, especially at that level, but it's really going to be true at the NFL level as well. There's a lot of short arm guys who are pushed to the inside in the NFL, but are good technical players. He's going to be playing against a lot of them with 34-inch arms. He's going to have a big advantage against a lot. Tyler Linderbaum would be a guy who he would give a lot of trouble to because of his length, particularly if he's crossing a guard to get there. What else? Short-armed IOL had a lot of trouble locking onto him. That's completely to be expected. So it was really, they needed to start by double-teaming him. And then anytime you have that situation, of course, that helps all the other defenders on the field. If you've got that, I'd say if you're looking for a weakness in him, I think he stands straight up too often. Some of it is a matter of he gets initial contact that he might not be used to at his length, and he stands up, and that obviously creates very disadvantaged situations when you do that. The bigger you are, the lower you need to stay. Players like Calais Campbell and Brent Urban, who are, you know, have stayed around the NFL for a very long time, understand it's all about pad level, particularly for a tall guy. And he will learn to do that better, I think. He has very natural, outstanding qualities for a stunt player, whether he's under or I think over either, because he's a quick guy. He'll be outstanding for that. For the Ravens, I think Chuck Smith would be a big help to him. I think his tools are ready to be a lot more polished than they are, even though he's been very effective playing where he has. 27 would be too high. I think he'll be gone by 59, where he'd be an amazing value if he were still around for the Ravens. But I don't see him still around at 59. I think he goes through the goalposts somewhere between 27 and 59.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's definitely flirting with the end of first round conversation, and I definitely see him probably being picked in the second round, but it would be before Baltimore's on the clock. So we agree with that there. By the way, I did look up his age. He is 24, but unfortunately his birthday is in August. So he will be 25 for the full 2025 season.
You know, that if I had known that, and this is why agents don't really want the age out there, go out and they scrub the internet to make sure no any reference to age is gone. They don't want to put in media guides that are for the individual colleges. They really do not want that. That probably would have colored my opinion a little bit of him. Mm. But and it might color my opinion on where he gets drafted. So if I was just reevaluating this now, knowing that he's going to be 25 as a rookie. Yeah. He might make it to 59. So let's put it that way.
Yeah.
We'll go. Okay. So move on to my number five guy, I guess. My number five or six. Five guy, right?
I think six, right? That's what I just said.
Okay. Then I missed somebody here. Yeah. It is my number six guy. Sorry. It's Derek Harmon. And going down to him, Derek Harmon played at Oregon. 6'4, 313. Another guy, very long arms. Again, I'm feeling sorry for the interior offensive lineman in the NFL this year because the long arm guys are coming out to play. 34 and 3/8 inch arms, 495 on the 40. I don't have his age either, but 3 years at Michigan State, 1 year at Oregon tells me he's probably the normal age, which probably means turns 23 at some point this year. A lot of these guys, you don't know on the defensive line because there's such a focus on size at the high school level that they often hold kids back in eighth grade to try and get them ready for a productive 4-year high school career at this point. And then they, move them on to college a year later. So here is the problem with Harmon. Harmon has been a terrible stops to miss tackle guy. In fact, he's the worst in class, both for the year and for his career. 2.1 this year to 1. and 2.7-1 for his career among all the draftable players. He has a career 19.1% missed tackle rate. That was 26.7% in 2024. And that's Geno Stone-esque. And you can't have that on the defensive line. That's not going to work. He has a high number of missed tackles, but he also actually still has fairly significant tackle productivity. So if he can get his tackle rate improved, he should be a very productive interior defensive lineman. But that's a big ask. A lot of players, they never really get better at that. There's a combination of form and grip strength are usually involved. And with defensive linemen in particular, particularly penetrators, a lot of those missed tackles will often be scored on plays in the backfield where they may have actually retracked the running back or forced them to go outside in a gap by just, you know, missing their ankle or whatever. Those kind of tackles they're missed tackles, but they may actually create plus value. So while I don't like missed tackles, I'm not as down on them as with PFF. And I think there's a study to be had in here for someone who wants an analytics project is to try and come up with a 3 or 5 point grading scale for missed tackles and apply that over the course of a year and try and figure out, you know, are there certain players or certain player types, penetrators or two gappers or whatever it might be, that are getting less serious missed tackles? Whereas I think safety missed tackles are probably very severe because of where they can occur. I think it's probably true that defensive linemen and probably edge players as well, their missed tackles might be less important. So I'd be really interested in a study like that and happy to help anyone who wants to do this in terms of setting it up or, you know, what I think would be a good idea for it. You know, your study, but I'd love to help you on it if you're interested. What else we got on here? 52% of his snaps were as a pass on passing downs. Certainly is a penetrating three tech. That's one problem, is that he gets, can get off his pins a little bit. We talked about that again. I don't think we need to repeat it. He has very high end half man moves as a pass rusher. He's got a rip and a swim, not just a bull rusher. Mentioned already the worst tackler anywhere near the top of the IDL board. 5 sacks and 4 passes defensed in his season at Oregon. That's just his last season here. He played at Michigan State previously. Some individual observations. He pried the ball free from the Ohio State running back Judkins. Now, Judkins is one of the top running backs in this draft. Judkins. So he beat Donovan Jackson inside, first of all, to start the play. And then he pried the ball free from Judkins. One of the most impressive interior defensive line plays of the entire season, as far as I'm concerned, particularly including the quality of opponent beaten on both ends of that play. It's very impressive closing speed, which is a big part of his playmaking. He wins reps with this half man leverage inside. And again, this is a case that is going to make him a very natural stunt participant. Anytime you can automatically set up 2 half man blocks that are supposed to be complementary, and then one is forced to peel off, You give the under player has an enormous advantage in terms of converting his position into a win. So what else? A good high motor for cleanup plays. Now, a lot of the bigger men, they are that way. A lot of the defensive linemen in this draft, but there's also another group within the draft that gets tired very easily and stands up a lot, and their play gets worse as they start getting their hands on the hips play after play after play on a long drive. Harmon is not that guy. Harmon is a high motor guy, and that's been a positive. Certainly needs to improve his tackling for the Ravens. Ideally, I think he'd move to nose tackle. He's at 6'4", 313. He's probably a little bit shy of that. So it's a question of, can he carry more weight efficiently? If he can't, he stays at three tech. If he can, he could be an outstanding nose rush pass rusher. And I think the way you'd use him there is you wouldn't try and use him on like first and second down in neutral game scripts. You use him to play from the lead, you know, to go to the nose at that point and be a value, maybe perhaps rushing right next to Matabike. So those two together would create all kinds of interior problems for the single team offensive lineman. So, it's a 3-to-block-2 situation. His value is reduced as far as I'm concerned with Matabike's presence. Some other team is going to like him more. I think for the Ravens, late in round two, possibly even in round three, if it's really value, would be where I'd want Harmon. I don't want him in round one. And I think it's not impossible he even goes before then. Mm-hmm. He certainly is mocked higher in some places. I just don't love the guy as much. And the missed tackles are the big problem for me.
Yeah. He was my number four guy. Everything that you said is still accurate to how I view him. I just ranked him a little bit higher based on, you know, his athleticism and what I think he could become as a pass rusher. I still don't have a first round grade on him. However, I do believe there's a good chance he goes in the first round. I'm mm-hmm. hoping it's not to Baltimore. You know, there's going to be a number of these defensive tackles that are really good, but more like second round grades, in my opinion, that are going to get picked earlier because it's a good class and teams want to add, you know, talent on their front four, front seven, after just seeing what the Eagles did. Plus it's just, you know, football 101. So yeah, I liked him a lot. Something that might be a reason why I have him a little bit higher than you was the age factor. So he's 21 years old and he won't turn 22 until October 9th. So most of the season he'll be 22.
Very nice. Thank you.
Yeah. Very nice age for him. I thought he was really springy, athletic. You know, you're watching Oregon, you're thinking about the Ravens drafting a defensive lineman. So the first thing that comes to mind is Haloti Ngata. And I immediately said, okay, you're not getting the next Haloti Ngata with this guy. Don't like all the fans that are, you know, mocking Derek Harmon to the Ravens at 27. I'm like, he's a good player, but don't go crazy with it. I like him a lot in the second round. I just don't think he's going to get there. Honestly, he's not going to be, you know, to the Ravens pick in the second round. And I don't really want them to move up for him. If they traded back, I'd be maybe okay with it if they traded back into the second round and out of the first altogether. But, you know, good player doesn't necessarily fit all of the needs, but, you know, you're going best player available. If you can somehow, you know, get into that range with him, then I'm all for it. But, yeah, really solid player.
What's your number of the pick that you think you'd be okay with? We talking 40, 45, or 35? What are you talking about?
I think like 45 for me. Yeah, I think he's like right in the middle of the second round-ish.
Maybe okay, like well, 50, that I mean, that would create some additional draft value if they traded back to get there, and it would cost them a ton to move up from 59. So I don't think that I think it's unlikely we'll see either of those, honestly. I don't think there's the palette for moving up in the second round in this draft that there might be otherwise. So we'll see how that plays out. But you know, obviously I'm probably a little bit more critical of Harmon than some other folks out there. So your number five guy, do we already talk about him yet?
Let's see. No, we have not. One moment. The other thing I wanted to mention real quick on Derek Harmon, the measurement I had for him was 6'4.5". So he was 6'4 4/8".
Okay.
So,
nice.
You know, yeah. So he's, you know, standing right around 6'5" with the cleats on. So, you know, nice height for him, not necessarily a nose tackle, but anything helps.
One of the other, James Ogden was on the show about offensive tackles, and he was noting that there was enormous differences in some of the arm length measurements for offensive tackles. And one of them was, and I don't remember who it was, whether it's Donovan Jackson or maybe somebody else, there's a difference of like an inch in terms of arm length between, might've been the Senior Bowl and the combine, or might've been the combine and the pro day, or I'm not sure what it was. If it's the combine and the pro day, I know which measurement I believe. But I think it might have been the Senior Bowl and the Combine, because what Ogden's comment was is it's the same company that's doing the measurements at both places, which is really shocking that they'd have that kind of a difference.
Yeah, I agree completely. I trust the Combine measurements, and all of these RAS numbers are, you know, from the Combine, unless those guys weren't there and testing or measuring. You know, it's really rare. So if you find an RAS number, it's probably the most trustworthy source out there. And that's what I base mine off of.
Okay.
So my number five player out of Tennessee, Omar Norman Lott. He was a really fun player to watch. Tons of juice, athleticism. He's smaller, 6'2", 291 pounds. So he's not going to be your kind of guy necessarily. 33 3/4 inch arms, 10 3/4 inch hands. I found out, you know, recently that he was the number one pass rusher among the defensive linemen in, I think, all of college football or all of the FBS, according to PFF. So I think he had the number one win rate, which is impressive coming out of the SEC. He has a fairly typical body type for the position, you know, of a three tech. I felt like he had enough sand in the pants. Lower body mass was good. Block shedding was pretty good in the run game. You know, shed, you know, and fill to make some tackles was really solid. He went against some, you know, talented guards at Alabama, you know, Booker, of course. And I think they rotated a little bit, or they might have had injuries in one of the Bama games I was watching where the guards changed. Yeah, in this game, right guard was number 77, and then right guard was also number 56. But, you know, he had wins against both of those guys in the pass rushing department. He did not have the best game against Georgia, which I love to see. But at the same time, you're evaluating the player and wanting him to succeed in terms of, you know, talent and getting him to the Ravens. So, yeah, I didn't see too much positive against Georgia for him, but he had a really good game against Florida in 2024. That was his best game that I watched of him. Unblocked blitz through the B gap, team up sack. So it was multiple guys there. Next play, like immediately, was a sack. Good pressure by other defenders as well. Good coverage helps on this play. He was right end on that one, head up versus the left tackle, number 58, but ends up sliding over, rushing against the right guard. Eventually wins on the outside shoulder to take down the quarterback. I think it was DJ Lagway, number two for Florida. He was one of the more athletic ones. Florida kind of tries out a lot of quarterbacks during the year. They did in 2024, kind of rotating, trying to figure out who's going to be their guy because they've had some challenges there. But he's one of the more mobile quarterbacks in the SEC. So anyways, he had nice pocket push, bull rush against the center in that game, kind of blow up the play for others to sack the quarterback. And the quality of opponent was solid, but I'm not sure how many Florida offensive linemen are in your top 10s. I'll have to go back and listen. I already listened to one of those shows, but yeah, I'm not sure if Florida was much off from Bama and Georgia. They probably were a tier lower, but I thought he was a really exciting player, a good athlete, and obviously from what PFF says, a strong pass rusher.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, definitely that's the strong side of his game. Okay, so there's a lot to go through here. I'll start with, I have him at number 15 overall in an honorable mention group. I think he's a fourth round selection for the Ravens, which means they won't get him. Somebody else will like him more, but I'll kind of give you some of my reasons. He has somewhat long arms at 33 3/4, but he only did 19 bench reps, which is not good for a defensive lineman period, even with longer arms like that. He has the single worst stops to miss tackle ratio, and it might be exactly tied with one other player, but for 2024 with 1.5 to 1. So he has a 15.1% miss tackle rate for his entire career, which is very high for a defensive lineman and just not acceptable. And in his case, it's not from piling up a lot of stops or missed tackles, which honestly at that kind of ratio, Yeah, less would be more. you want to have as few as possible. His 9-6, 9 stops to 6 missed tackles. And you look at that and you say, how did he only get 9 stops in a whole college season? Well, he plays 59% of his snaps were pass rush snaps in his career. And if you look at it, he never played over 29 snaps in a game in 2024. So he's a pass rush specialist through and through. Only twice did he play as many as 10 run snaps in a game. Again, incredible that would happen. I mean, just some closing out of games against Tennessee. They, I don't know what the record was this year. I know they were good, but they still faced situations where they would have been being closed out on. He's very polished as a pass rusher. That I like. In his case, I'd say that's a level of concern that he comes to the NFL with so much polish that I question the additional upside. He's also got some behavioral issues and some injury concerns that have come up in the past. He missed 3 games. He also got involved in a fight at the end of the Florida game. If you're going to miss a game for suspension, and he was actually suspended for a half, which is, I've never heard of that happening before. Have you heard of that before?
Yes. Oftentimes when a player will get charged for targeting in a game, the following game, they have to miss the first half. So that could be the case if he was, targeting somebody in the previous one.
Okay. So the way it happened in this game is the quarterback for, I want to see who it was Ole Miss or somebody else. That was Florida. The quarterback for Florida was taking a long time to kneel because they wanted to run out a few extra seconds that were on the clock. And then there was a big fight that broke out over physicality on that play. When, of course, if you're not kneeling down right away, it's open season. And so anyway, the SEC came in and I think there probably were several players involved and they would have competitive concerns if they suspended the entire, a bunch of defensive players for one half. So they probably staggered it and whatnot to make it what it was. The Ravens will ask him about that kind of thing if they're in fact interested in him. I think his pass rushing is not great enough that he can overcome these other things that are wrong with his game: a bad bench, a poor stops to miss tackle ratio, he's a situational pass rusher who frankly has not performed at the highest possible level as a pass rusher, given how situational his play is. And so you got a very narrow space here on the Ravens where he could even fit, because Madubuike is going to be in there on every high leverage passing down. So who are you going to bring in? When are you going to bring in Omar or not Norman Lott if he's on the Ravens? You're going to try and start him as an early down three tech, expose him to a bunch of run plays where he hasn't been successful. So I think that was my basic problem, is that he could replace Madubuike if Madubuike missed a bunch of time, and then he'd be the situational guy. He'd be part of a pass rush pairing with Jones that would occur. But I don't see him as being a really good multi-down, multi-situational fit. So for me, he drops a lot on the Ravens list. That said, he's a good football player, and there's value there. If the Ravens could get him as low as, say, round 4, it would be too much to pass off at that point. But my guess is he'll go probably in round... probably between rounds 2 or 3. It'll be a day 2 pick at some point. I don't know if he'll for certain be a round 2 pick, but he probably will be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You have to do, let's see.
I think my next guy might have been named. I think we're down to the top 3 for me, because I had Darius Alexander at 5. Mm-hmm. And I had Tyleek Williams at 4. Did you do your number 4 guy yet?
Well, I think you talked about him already. Derek Harmon, we went over him.
So we've already done that. Okay. And so now we're up to the top 3, where I'd be shocked if we didn't have the same guys. But who's your number 3 guy?
Yes. Kenneth Grant for me out of Michigan is my number 3. Hopefully he's on your list.
Number 17. I'm just kidding.
Kenneth Grant, 6'3" and a half, so basically 6'4" out there, 331 pounds. This is a good size player. When I saw him, he fits the mold of a Michael Pierce replacement. 22 reps on the bench, not the greatest for somebody of his profile, but he has decently long arms for kind of his frame. 33 and a half inch arms, So pretty darn close to 34-inch arms, 10.13-inch hands, and he had a solid RAS of 7.17. So pretty good tester athletically. I definitely see him more of a more as a nose tackle than somebody that's going to kick out and play any true end. He's very athletic. I think there's some quote from Jim Harbaugh at some point saying he was a gift from the football gods when he was arriving at Michigan. He might be on the, I think he is on the freaks list as well. I would be surprised if he's not. Let's see. He had a drop in coverage from the nose tackle against Texas in the 2024 game that I thought was just completely useless. It was fun to see, you know, remind me of Michael Pierce, but basically he was a waste of space out there.
Were they bringing somebody else? Was he playing a short zone so they could bring a blitz off the slot, say, or blitz from interior inside linebacker?
Yeah, I think it might have been a little bit of a swapping, you know, blitz exchange, but it was not very effective. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the details of the play, but that sounds right. Takes on plenty of double teams. That's what you expect from somebody his size playing nose tackle. He's going to be a two gapper. Not a dominant winner there against Texas, but they have a pretty good offensive line. Let's see. He has a powerful bull rush against he did kick out or had a number of reps or against the right tackle. So that was interesting to see, even though I definitely view him as somebody that's going to be more at that one tech or zero tech. Good tackle for a loss assist in the Illinois game in 2024 to bring down the running back number 21 there. Positive outside move versus the center number 64 who gets away with holding. You know, a number of these games, you're going to see these defensive linemen doing their best, getting into the backfield and seeing offensive linemen holding, and it's not going to get called, but that's the reality of the NFL as well. You want to see these guys overcome that and really just be able to, hey, you're not going to get the call. What are you going to do now? And I thought, you know, he did a pretty solid job with that. Stronger than most competition. He's part of, you know, a stunt loop that is effective in that game. Quarterback pressured by number zero, playing wide nine alignment. And the quarterback gets hit there as well. Let's see. He plays through. So from big men, you don't always see the effort there on every play. And I think that's what you get with Kenneth Grant. When he is 100%, when he's locked in on every play and plays through the whistle, he's awesome. And when he doesn't, then he's just a little bit better than average. So I think the kind of the vision for a lot of these teams that are, you know, going to be talking to him and considering drafting him is, what can I get out of this guy? Does this guy love football? Can we get this guy to, you know, get in the right conditioning? Can we get him to, you know, play the correct amount of snaps where he is just, you know, going full blow the whole time and, you know, playing through the whistle? Because when he does that, he's really awesome, like he was in the Illinois game. And, he was a part of another TFL in that game as well, just blocking up the running lanes and letting the linebackers, you know, flow and get to the running back.
He averaged 45 and a half snaps per game this last year for Michigan. That's a level he would not ever have to play for the Ravens. So if he came to the Ravens, he'd be a nose tackle right away. He'd be an early down nose. He wouldn't be taking a lot of Travis Jones snaps. So probably his first year, he'd be fortunate to get on the field for 30 or 40% of the snaps, where you're looking then at about right around 20 or 22, 23 snaps per game being the top end, right about half what he played at Michigan. So that should really benefit a player like him. Completely agree, by the way, with your comments about conditioning in particular, about some of the ways in which He's definitely a hands on hips player who can get a little tired on long drives, and that's a problem. But he's a massive human being at 331 pounds and 6'4", has the good length you want. And here's the big one. His stops to missed tackle ratio is right up there near the top of the group. He's not quite as good as Jordan Phillips, but 11.0 this last year and 10.3 career in terms of the stops over the missed tackles. That's a very high ratio. Only a 5.5% missed tackle rate in his career. That's one of the things that shows up. He latches on. He gets on your foot, your waist. He's got real good grip strength. If he's got a jersey, he'll take.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Take you down by a jersey. If he's got an ankle, he'll take you down by an ankle. There's not a lot of residual twisting and struggling involved, I'd say, from most running backs that I saw. Most of the time, they knew they were going down, and they were just happy to get down quickly and not get hurt, sometimes it seems. So definitely a massive human being there. I think he did benefit from playing next to Mason Graham a lot, so he'll be a guy that will miss having as dominant a performer next to him. But on the other hand, he's a hell of a player himself. Sets his feet pretty well, I think, but probably could do that better. And certainly when he gets tired, that's been a problem. Get him going every rep, I think, is a very good point. He reportedly played as high as 360 pounds at Michigan. Definitely a guy who needs NFL nutrition on him. And in NFL teams, one of the things they do is, and I've heard the Browns or Bengals, one of those two teams doesn't do this. I think it's the Bengals. But the Ravens, I mean, they expect their rookies and other players to come in and have all three meals for the day in the building. And so and most guys, they don't have any interest in being otherwise tempted with pizza or other things. I mean, you can get that at the castle, but you basically are being fed three nutritious meals per day. They don't have to go out and get groceries. They don't have to spend money on food. You know, it's a huge positive when you're making a practice squad or a camp salary kind of thing. So they're positive on that, but it's a great move for the team in terms of controlling nutrition for these players too. And really watching, you know, what is it that they're eating? Are they maintaining their weight and doing good things? And that's obviously part of the daily routine there. Grant had 5 passes defensed at the line of scrimmage in each of the last 2 seasons. That's a ton. Very few players get 10 in their entire college career, and he had 10 in 2 years. All right, what else we got? Stands up some. That's a function of being tired. I think I saw an effective spin move. Again, very unusual for an IDL. I always note it. Whenever I see it on an IDL, I always write it down. He had an interception versus Nebraska that really was a good awareness play. So he's basically being blocked towards the edge of the shell right around the edge of the pocket, right around what I guess would be 9 o'clock on the pocket. And they were kind of letting go of him. Then there's a tip ball in the middle, and Grant finds the football in the air and gets it. I have not seen interior defensive linemen typically be very good at that. Usually it has to be someone from the secondary coming up to make that play, but he did a good job on that. He looks like he'll be a guy who is truly fantastic as an under or even an over on stunts. He's quick enough to be the over. Ravens have had, by the way, you don't often assume that the bigger guy necessarily is going to be the underneath guy all the time. Sometimes it really makes sense for a guy with a incredible first step to be that guy. And Kenneth Grant has some of that, but Sam Adams was an over guy a lot, despite being hit. James Jones, who is a guy who's forgotten now as a Ravens defensive lineman in the late 90s, was a guy who had more stunts per snap played on the field than any Raven in the team history. And I don't know that for an absolute fact, but having scored all these games and seeing how many times Stunt 99 shows up, I know it's probably true. So Grant is a guy I think will be fine over and under. Anyway, he Grant is a really question because he'll be right in the wheelhouse at number 27 that he might be available. Mm-hmm. And I think it is a matter of who else is available that time. It's always a matter of that. But would he be a reasonable value pick at 27? I think he would be. I think he'd be fine. The one thing that I think people will question about it is you have a nose tackle with a year 5 option that doesn't have a whole lot of value to the team. So you're kind of giving up on that element of friction that's potentially there for you. On the other hand, it gives the Ravens defensive line a shot of youth and real talent that I think this team would really need. And again, Kenneth Grant's only 22 in October, right? That's the age you have on him?
Yep. I just looked him up. Doesn't turn 22 until the end of October.
Yeah. So fantastic in terms of a young player, very developable and hopefully very coachable at the next level. Be thrilled to get him at 27.
And where did you have him on your list?
Oh, I have him at 3 also.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm guessing we might even have the same two guys in order. Who's your number 2 guy?
I think it's your turn, but I'm happy to give you mine.
No, my number 3 guy was Grant, so we're back to number 2, so it's you.
Oh, okay, I got you. My number 2 is Walter Nolan from Ole Miss.
I thought he was another match.
Yeah, I thought he was awesome. He played at Ole Miss and then obviously at Texas A&M before that. Physical freak type player, 5-star, one of the top recruits, if not the top recruit of his class. Good bull rush, gets held and, lets the refs know about it. He's the type of frame that really could play all along the line. Especially, from the 3 out, maybe he could play a little bit of nose, especially in a pass rushing situation, but his frame is just like rocked up. It's like if Myles Garrett was a little bit more of an interior player is kind of what you're getting with Walter Nolan. Not the same level player. Myles Garrett is definitely above Nolan, but that's just kind of the frame that I would give to people that don't know what he looks like. Yeah, he kicks out to a true D end over the left tackle, set the edge on the run. He's good against the run, in my opinion. But, he has to work a little bit on hand fighting against Georgia. He cooks the center in pass pro. The center was pass pro. And that's impressive, too, because you really like Georgia center. Against Florida, he had a good pass rush rep versus the center and left guard with a swipe move, but whiffs on bringing down the quarterback. That was number 2, Legway, that I mentioned earlier. Gets knocked back, continues to play to assist tackle running back. He's a good edge setter Good at weeding through the trash to attack running backs. He can really kind of sift through all of that mess. Good backside pursuit on runs. You're going to see that with really athletic players, like I've talked about with Owe in the past. He's going to be good at any sort of backside pursuit plays. Gets a coverage sack. Good effort to take down the quarterback. He contributed to another sack as the third man to a quarterback later in that game. Tackle for a loss. Blows up a play in the backfield. Lining up as the right defensive tackle. Good heads-up play. Pass deflection. As we mentioned earlier, a lot of these guys are good at getting their hands up at the line of scrimmage. And he gets another tackle for a loss. So that game's kind of littered with, you know, splashy plays for him. The Florida game in 2024. And then 2023 against LSU when he was with A&M. You know, plays some edge. Looks good out there. Assists on a tackle for a loss. He plays a little bit of, you know, it's more edge. He's playing Leo and left end. Swap sides occasionally, good swim move, outside shoulder pressure assist, gets the quarterback to have an incompletion there. And a criticism from 2023 in that LSU game, I think the anchor is not necessarily the strongest in the run game. And that makes sense for him. I mean, he is that lighter bodied, rocked up, borderline edge player that really can, you know, play up and down the line. So if he is going to fail, it's going to be more against powerful run game on the interior. But, you know, what he can do to set the edge, what he can do to get after the passer and really kind of put some moves on guards and centers. Oh, man. I mean, he's so talented. I could easily see people having him as number one from a traits perspective. But we will get to our number one, who's kind of consensus board right now, in a minute. But I'll let you talk about Walter.
Yeah, I loved Walter too. Also at number two. So I'm going to try and just hit on some of the things he did. And his 27 bench reps is just meh for his length. Fantastic stops to miss tackle rate. 16.0 this year, 32 stops he had, which is very productive, and only two missed tackles. Career, he's only missed five tackles his whole career in three seasons, 4.7% missed tackle rate, and 14.4-1 is his ratio. So 72 stops he's made with only missing five tackles his whole career. Just amazing. The 72 defensive wins in 3 years is a terrific total, by the way. His snaps have increased every year. He's playing way more than he will in the NFL this last year at Ole Miss, but he does have, I would agree, he's one of the few guys that I can envision as being more of an uncovered end for the Ravens. And there aren't a bunch of the guys in this class that I would trust to do this, but Nolan is one. And he's got the right size to do it, meaning he's just a little bit on the light side. And if you're at the team like the Ravens and you have a shortage of quality edges and you want to save their reps for obvious pass rushing situations, Nolan's a great guy to have on the edge. And he can do these things. So I think we might see some single outside linebacker play were he to come to the Ravens, where we get an uncovered opportunity for Walter Nolan on one side. Let's see, what is there to say? I think his most likely position where he's going to play most of his time is going to be at three tech in the NFL. I don't think he's capable, or at least I don't think it'd be to his advantage to try and carry enough weight to play nose. I think that would take too much out of his game in terms of what he has. Very effective, pushes right through half man blocks. I love to see that when a player is just too dominant for that. And that kind of reminds me, you got to talk about Myles Garrett, but that's something Myles Garrett, you know, you try and double team Myles Garrett, even, you know, get the left tackle and left guard working on it. It often is a futile effort because they're both taking half a man, and Garrett is too powerful for that. So I like that. Pretty good hand placement on the center, I thought. So he comes across the guard, and there are a couple highlights that ran into this where he got his hands on the center and put him in a very disadvantageous position. And even though he might have gotten some contact from the guard, he played through that, and then he played through the center as well. So those are nice. He's kind of a natural penetrator, not a great set your feet player, so he can be moved by double teams. But when he gets in the backfield, he gets so far into the backfield, it's usually creating very difficult dilemmas for the ball carrier. So that running back is has a bifurcated backfield. He has to decide one way or the other. If he chooses the wrong way, he'll get taken down for a loss. If he chooses the right way, it probably still is not going to be a big play. So he's been criticized by some for his penetration. I generally think that makes more plays than it costs plays. I wouldn't tell a player to stop penetrating if they're really causing difficult choices for a running back. So anyway, I think that was one of the things I really liked about him. If the Ravens' chance to take him will be at 27, if at all. And there's no trading back for this guy. They could trade up to get him, by the way. If you want to go through the Mark Andrews trade routine for the Emin Wari kind of pick and go up to 22 and take Walter Nolan, they could possibly do that. So if he was on the board, it's a player the Ravens might consider moving up for. But I think that they probably, given the other talent that's available and the kind of the gradual grade off, that they'll look for that other player, Grant, Watts, Emin Wari, whoever it might be, to drop to them, maybe Pierce, maybe, at 27 to be a reasonable alternative. So loved him. I think he's a guy who is in the crosshairs at 27 as a possible pick.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, I think he's definitely gone before 27. If he's there at 27, I'd be really interested in picking him. Like we talked about, his particular archetype is more that three tech, doesn't fit a need on paper for the 2025 season, but he's such a talented player that I don't think you pass on that sort of skill set if he's available right there. It depends on the board, but I really like him.
So this is one of the really fun things about watching the draft with us on draft night, is we'll have each picked out the four or five guys we like, and we get more and more excited as each pick goes and it's somebody else. So quarterback's taken, woohoo, Ashton Chenty is off the board, great, kind of thing. So at least that for me anyway, I think that's the case. So they're going to get down to they often will get to a spot like 22 and they'll have five guys that we like, and we'll go, well, we're getting one of them at 27 for sure. Maybe it's 23 and there'll be five guys we like. And that's a lot of the fun of draft night. If you ever kind of want to watch it and really get into the economy of the draft and what's going on in terms of how much other teams like him, what other teams kind of need and might take, the need for quarterbacks across the league is so high. You got some trade up possibilities ahead of the Ravens that might bring, say, the Browns back into the first round to get a Shedeur Sanders if he drops into the 20s. There's lots of ways that it could happen, but it's a very fun process to watch. It always appreciate having you there on draft night, Jake.
Thank you. I always enjoy being there and getting the perspective of everybody else.
All right. So number one guy, you start us off.
If we have the wrong, a different number one guy, I think there might be a problem, but we don't. Mason Graham, as we mentioned earlier, defensive lineman out of Michigan. Special player. I honestly spent maybe the least amount of time on him because it was just kind of obvious.
Same thing. We won't
that he was going to be that guy. But here are some measurables: 6'3.5", so about 6'4", 296 pounds is what I have. These are RAS measurables, so they should be about accurate. 24 reps on the bench, not bad. Not great either. 32-inch arms. So, he's a white guy, interior defensive lineman. It's pretty rare for them to have long arms, and he doesn't. But, golly, he is so quick, so athletic. What he's able to do to really make Kenneth Grant even, a more special player at Michigan is impressive. So, I don't know why I'm mentioning his short arms. I was just tying it to the bench reps were there. I think right. With those 32-inch arms, he should have benched a little bit more, but a little bit over 9 inches in the hands as well. He's just splash play after splash play. Each game he's gonna get something. He's gonna have some TFLs, he's gonna have a sack. A lot of times it's gonna be multiple big plays in games. And then while he's not doing that, he's just playing really sound fundamental football. He draws a lot of attention. This is kind of the Aiden Hutchinson effect. He was that guy for Michigan over the past couple years. I'm not too familiar with the edge class yet. I mean, I got a lot of work to do before the draft. So I can't really speak to it, but in my opinion, he was the strongest player on Michigan's defense, especially the defensive line. They have some talented players in the secondary as well, but I'm saying I don't think there is an Aiden Hutchinson there right now, but there was Mason Graham, and he's just really, really solid. A lot of pressure, a lot of sacks against Minnesota in 2024, blocked a field goal against Washington. I don't really think that it was something very repeatable based on his size and kind of where he's going to be asked to play in the NFL. I don't think you're going to get a lot of that out of him. But it was cool to see that he did tip one in that game, teamed up for a sack against Washington, had some TFLs against Illinois. Let's see, good hand swipe rip move versus guards to get upfield for sacks and pressure. The USC game was really nice. His 2024 game against Southern Cal, that is. He had a really nice pass rush twisting move versus their center, number 79, for quarterback pressure and hit in the red zone to force an incompletion. Let's see. There was another play right after that. A good pass rush past. So he went past the quarterback, you know, in the pocket, kind of looped around him. The quarterback stepped up and, you know, his eyes go down. You know, he's looking to, you know, get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's able to turn around and, you know, bring him down pretty quickly thereafter. So a good effort player as well. High effort, fast, twitchy, not the most athletically gifted player in the draft. That's going to be Walter Nolan along the defensive line, in my opinion. But I think he's just very well tuned. He has a lot of moves in the bag. He knows what he's doing. I think Chuck Smith could still make him a better player. He's never going to be in Baltimore. Well, I can't say never, but not in this draft.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is what it is, but a very talented guy that I think is going to come in day one and be an impact player for whatever team drafts him.
Completely agree on that. All right. So the one thing I'll say about Graham, and I'm not going to go into tons of detail, but he'll remind you of Kelly Gregg to an extreme degree. He's like a still bigger, twitchier Kelly Gregg. And he probably weighs about actually the same amount, but he's taller because Kelly Gregg is around 6'0", and he's 6'4". So his stops to missed tackles are amazing. 15.0 to 1 last year, 9.4 career is very good. Also, only 7.4% missed tackles in his career. The wrestling background shows up all over the place in terms of leverage generation, incredible hand fighter. He's the guy in this class probably for that. And again, that's Kelly Gregg, if you remember him as a player, being an undersized guy, a short arm guy. In Kelly Gregg's cases, he was only a little over 30 inches in terms of arm length, but he made it work. Even at that reduced length, always the hunter as a tackler is what I put down. I mean, you have a guy who is constantly looking to throw this guy out of the way and get to the ball carrier and take him down. It's he's a very fun player to watch from that perspective. He had 30 stops and just 2 missed tackles this last year. So he's not just doing it. You can get to 15 to one in at least 3 different ways. You get it with 15 and 1, with 30 and 2, possibly with 45 and 3. Nobody makes 45 plays in a year, but 30 and 2 is about as good as you're going to get with a 15 to 1 ratio. So that's pretty outstanding. Pass rush productivity is excellent for an interior defender. Very high motor, has great closing speed, by the way. It might not surprise you to know this, but Kelly Gregg came into the National Football League as a situational pass rusher. We don't think of him that way. We think of him as a nose tackle, very productive run defender, guy you got off the field on third down. But in 2001, the Ravens had one of the deepest defensive lines in NFL history with 8 guys who ended up playing 10 seasons, I think, in the league. And Kelly Gregg barely made the team over Dwayne Missouri. If you remember that famous preseason game, the very last one against the Giants, that day game. And he was pretty good as a pure situational pass rusher that year, and then evolved into the player we all know beginning in 2002. So anyway, Graham will have a much bigger immediate impact. He's a better version of Kelly Gregg. One thing you see, and there were a couple players who fell into this, including some of my honorable mention guys, but has a devastating push-pull thing. This is true of a lot of the longer arm players. Actually kind of interesting to see that in a shorter arm player, because typically bigger guys like the 464 pound guy from Florida, Watson, right? Watson.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Watson. All the linemen are trying to lean into him. And he's one of the guys who really developed this great push pull move that, hey, if they're going to jump into you like that, go ahead and drag him down to the ground. And he actually has enough lateral quickness in that case to throw a guy to the ground. Graham had that move as well. It's very unusual in a short arm guy. You got to be a great hand fighter to basically grab the offensive lineman at a point after he's, you know, lunging into you, getting over his feet to make a play there. So I thought that I was very impressed with him doing it, probably even more so than Watson. Good negotiation of traffic. Bull rush remains his go-to move. I think, honestly, the PFF pressure number is a significant understatement based on the games I watched. They have him for 34 total pressures on the year, and only 20 of those are hurries. I would say he imperiled the pocket, or imperiled the cone, a lot more than that. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case, by the way, because he's the kind of guy who, with his bull rush, is going to engender a lot of slow death reps for whoever he faces one-on-one. So I think their number is probably too low on that, as I would have scored it anyway. I would love him for the Ravens, but I would expect him to be gone in the top 10 in the draft.
Yeah, for sure. Same thing. I mean, if he fell to like 23 or something, I don't foresee the Ravens moving up at all. I mean, even going from 27 to like 24 is a lot to give up.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to get picked in the top 7 pretty easily. I would almost lock that. Very strong player.
Yeah. All right, let's talk some honorable mentions. And what I like to do in these is just give me one thing maybe you like about him and the reason why you think he might be either a fit for the Ravens or just a good player, whatever it might be. But one at a time, maybe we'll do about 3 each in terms of guys who are on our honorable mention list.
Sure. For me, Nazir Stackhouse. I couldn't get a Georgia guy into my top 10. But you better believe I got one in my honorable mention. Honestly, all 3 of the guys in the draft this year will be drafted, in my opinion. But Stackhouse kind of stands alone as the most valuable for the Ravens, in my opinion. He is a true nose tackle, just enormous size, awesome 2-gapper, incredible anchor as a run defender, and just, you know, he stonewalls. He stonewalls the defense. He stonewalls the offense and just, you know, creates and, you know, provides opportunities for the players around him. I think he's just a really solid player. I would imagine he probably goes in the 4th round. Maybe, I don't know, maybe not, but I see him as that kind of value. Really late 3rd. Early 4th into maybe the 5th round. It just depends on how many teams are looking for that style of player, but I think he's talented. Maybe the reason that he would fall a little bit is age. He has been in that Georgia program for a little while. So I don't know his exact age offhand. I could look it up, but I think he's a strong honorable mention for Baltimore.
Okay. All right, fair enough. I have not looked at him, but I appreciate the name, and I'll go back and look. I've noted it here. A guy I liked, my number 12 guy overall, actually, is Deion Walker of Kentucky, another SEC guy who is 6'7", 331, 34 and a quarter inch arms, exactly fits the nose tackle requirements for the Ravens. He does have a medical, so he's got a back fracture, which occurred during the 2024 season. He went for surgery after it, so everything's got to be checked out for that to be the right pick. once you get into day three picks, you're probably willing to gamble a little bit more on medicals. Obviously, you're willing to gamble a little bit more than on a first or second round pick. You just can't afford to have the lost developmental time and the lost actual play time for a guy you're picking anyway on the first 2 days, which is why I think, you know, the Ravens are going to avoid David Ajabo risk in this draft. Jihad Campbell is probably the single most obvious player that I don't think you can put a first round grade on very easily on right now, given the medical condition. Walker does a real good job of bifurcating the backfield. I could say a lot more about him, but he'd be a great value at 129 if the Ravens could get him there.
Okay. I did have him as an honorable mention as well.
Okay.
Solid player. I didn't love the tape I watched, but it was 2024. I didn't get into his 2023. And that information about the injury could help a lot in understanding why what I saw wasn't as good as some of the hype I've seen around him. And I believe he had a strong Senior Bowl. So I haven't watched the Senior Bowl tape of him, but that is really interesting. Hopefully he is healthy and doesn't miss, you know, any significant time his rookie year. An honorable mention for me would be Arkansas defensive lineman Eric Gregory. I thought he was, you know, a solid player day three for sure, you know, round four, round five somewhere. He was, you know, just a high effort, very average body type defensive lineman. The thing that stood out to me watching him was he was kind of at an uncanny level getting to the ball carrier as the first man there. I would venture to say that his tackle percentage or tackle rate is not the best because he didn't always wrap up, but he impacted plays by, you know, getting there first and then allowing other people to then rally. Even if he just got to the player and made an impact on him, kind of bounced off or whatever, that sort of time delay then allowed more Arkansas defenders to get involved in the play and, you know, create tackles for losses or just really small gains in the running game.
Just want to mention, it's about Gregory. He had 24 stops, only two missed tackles this last year. So that's a terrific year. Yeah.
Okay. That's great. I didn't realize that he didn't miss more, but I thought he was really solid. Landon Jackson is an interesting player. I think he's maybe gotten a little bit more hype than what I've seen, but really powerful bull rush from him.
Landon Jackson belongs on the edge, right?
Yes, he does. I was just mentioning him because of the Arkansas thing.
Gotcha. Okay.
But Eric Gregory is an honorable mention for me in the day three.
All right. Well, I'll just wrap this up with one more because I don't think you can go through this class without talking about Desmond Watson, who's the most extreme physical specimen to play this game. But 6'5", 464. I am not kidding. He's basically almost 100 pounds heavier than Daniel Fa'alele. In fact, Fa'alele may have lost a few pounds from 380-ish or so. No arm length is measured. They might have trouble actually measuring his arm length. Finding the spot where the arm starts might be difficult. He ran a 5.92 40. That is Eisen-esque in a suit number. 25 inch vertical. I think I could do better. I'm 61 years old. I think I could do better. 36 bench reps, however, and he reportedly has freakish weight room strength. Squatted 720, benched 520. They're both probably exaggerations, but you know the claim is there. Let's just put it there. He actually is a little more athletic than what I expected to see. Only had a 9.6% missed tackle rate. Decent stops to missed tackle conversion there. A ratio of 5.5 and 5.9 career. He absolutely blocks the sun. And he does is push as a pass rusher, but had one of the really impressive plays of the year when he pried the ball free from the South Carolina running back, took it directly out of his midsection and started returning it. And he was tackled by Spencer Rattler. Did you see that highlight? to see, quarterback who's now playing in the NFL for the Saints to take down Watson on a play like that was pretty hilarious. So the only thing I'll say about him is that in the last two rounds, the Ravens have five picks of relatively low value. Watson is the sort of player, if they want to take a developmental chance on somebody, he's not necessarily the right guy, but they have capital to do it.
Yes, I agree. There's just so many defensive linemen that that are worth drafting in this class. And I think at some point on day three, there's just going to be a run of these guys. They might be sprinkled throughout each round, but they may really be the best player available in many cases.
The best group, right?
Yeah, best group. But also I'm saying in particular, some of these players will be the best available at that point. I have some more I could mention. I'll just do a couple names instead of sure. really getting into it. So Tyrion Ingram Dawkins out of Georgia, just to mention real quick, because a lot of people don't know his game. His RAS was a 9.79. He had a 4.86 40 yard dash, 6'4 and 6'8, 276 pounds, so really lightweight. He probably slimmed down to run a little bit faster, I would guess. Great explosive 36-inch vertical, 10.4 in the broad, 7.28 in the three cone, and 4.34 in the shuttle. I mean, he's just a freak of an athlete, which is why I would say go and watch his 2024 stuff. That's kind of when he broke out. And you'll see a very solid player in a number of games. And I think a team's going to bet on that athleticism. Other than him, just a couple names, the Colorado players, I didn't have much tape on them, but Chidozie, I'm struggling to pronounce the name, but anyways, Chidozie's his first name, number 97 at Colorado. Interesting player for day three, honorable mention. And then his teammate, Shane Cokes, number 99, is also a solid player. I think both of those guys will get drafted. So there's going to be plenty of guys out there for the Ravens.
Let me toss out a few names we didn't even mention that are good players. Shamar Turner, a lot of people have him higher. I think he's a third-round pick probably. CJ West out of Indiana is highly thought of. Probably a fourth-round player for the Ravens to get value on it. Jamari Caldwell of Oregon, another guy that is on a lot of people's lists. And J.J. Pegues is a really interesting one because he played at Ole Miss, and he's a combination defensive lineman slash fullback running back. He's a very powerful short yardage back who always played offense. In fact, he played tight end his first year of college ball and then shifted to being a defensive lineman and has put on a ton of weight. Looks like he could be, if you're looking for two guys who could be the next Patrick Ricard in this draft, Pegues would be one possibility, even though he might get drafted. He might have too much draft value to get taken and put in this role by the Ravens. But the second one is the,
North Carolina
Lampkin, Willie Lampkin. So, exciting couple of players. And, you know, there's plenty all the way down the line. Ty Hamilton was number 24 on my list, and I thought he was perfectly fine. I'd love to get him with a 7 or a UDFA. But, you know, effective lineman. And if there's players like that left at the end of a draft, I mean, this is a year where the Ravens practice squad might not be rated as quickly on the defensive line.
Oh, for sure. And I don't know if you watched Cameron Jackson from Florida.
Yeah.
But I watched him and, you know, as much as I could of Desmond Watson, which was, there's a lot less tape of him. I would rather take Watson because
Watson of the sheer, over Jackson.
Okay. Because of the sheer size and what I think the Ravens would be looking for in a nose tackle, Cameron Jackson has pretty prototypical nose tackle size, but I just wasn't as impressed with him. And Watson didn't do too much, but I think I would just be more willing to take, you know, a very late round flyer UDFA on Watson and see maybe what he could do. But yeah, I was just wondering what you thought of those guys.
Yeah, and Cameron Jackson is at number 21 for me, and Watson is at 24. So I'll relativize it for that way first. Cameron Jackson, I could see a sixth round pick going on. I don't see anything but a 7 on Watson. It's just too much vitriol that will naturally be spewed on whoever takes Watson. You know, there's going to be a lot of fun talk too, but there's also going to be, if you're a fan of that team, you're going to a good percentage of your fans will question that selection. And they'll question other things about impact on other players. And I actually think that Cameron Jackson, who also has problems maintaining his weight, he may be literally feeding off, to pun intended, what Desmond S. Watson is doing in the cafeteria. So it's kind of thing that, that you know, if you have one overeater and you say, well, wait a minute, you're talking to me, what about this guy over here kind of thing? You don't want that. You don't want that situation to occur. You want everybody to be basically on the same program. And either of those guys, can you even imagine them trying to pass the conditioning test for the Ravens?
definitely not Watson. Definitely not. The last guy I'll mention is Sanders, TJ Sanders' teammate, Tonka Hemingway. I mean, there's a couple of them. The other guy is DeAndre Jules. But I really like Tonka Hemingway a decent amount. I think he'll be a day three pick. No brainer.
All right. We got to call it here. This has been a very long second episode, but I really appreciate it. Great conversation always. Tell folks where they can talk football online with you, Jake.
I'm on Twitter, or X as they call it. Follow me at Real Jake Vogel, V-O-G-E-L. And I talk Ravens, Georgia, college football, NFL, you name it.
All right. And once again, hope you'll watch the draft with us, and let me know if you want to be a panelist. You can always, you know, pose your questions within the stream on draft night. But if you'd like to be a panelist and be on for at least an hour, particularly on day three, let me know and I'll get right back to you. Jake, thanks again for joining me.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.